Ready. Okay, we're now starting camera roll 92. We're continuing the interview with Fred Ross Jr. Our next take will be take 5.
Okay, this is take 5. Fred Ross Jr., marker.
Now, Fred, we were talking about the 80s, and it seems it was going to be in for the long haul. Could you tell me that story again?
Well, the union was up against a very hostile governor, Duke Majan, who was in the pocket of the growers, who promised the growers when he ran for governor that he would basically decimate the ALRA, the Labor Relations Act, and the best way to do that is by not enforcing it. Reagan had just been elected president. So the political climate had taken a dramatic turn to the right, so there's going to be a hostile political climate in the 80s. Like Caesar made the judgment that he really needed to dig in for a long, long haul of a hostile political climate and once again go back to the boycott.
But yet your dad, during this period, continued to organize, and there was a period that was there where Dad was going to organize people, to teach people to organize, yet in the end there was nobody left there to organize. I mean, what happened? What was your father's reaction there?
Caesar would call on my dad to do special projects. As I said, he would usually call on him when it was time to go to war. So in the 80s, Caesar called on him more rarely because it was a different stage in the struggle. And my dad would, whenever Caesar would ask him to help train new organizers, he would do it. My dad was one who understood the need for patience. And if there ever was someone who was in it for the long haul, it was my dad.
What is the Joker dad? He had quite a long trajectory. He had infinite patience. But what was it, the Joker dad? What was that thing that gave him the fire with the dad?
He had a lot of anger about injustice. And he just couldn't live with himself if he wasn't doing something about it. So he was, and there was plenty around. There was a reporter who once likened him to Gary Cooper in High Noon, coming into town and taking on the biggest, baddest bully. But he was not a solo operator like a Gary Cooper. What he did was go out and teach people and train people how they could do it for themselves. Because he understood that would have one that's a lot more respectful of people. And even more important, it's a lot more enduring. Because when you're gone, you want to leave something important in your place. So he left thousands and thousands of people, ordinary people who learned how to do extraordinary things because they learned about power and learned how to use it and how to build it and how to strategize and how to fight. And that burning anger inside of him that drove him, that flame, didn't go out until he died. He was training organizers with me in the summer of 1988 when he was 78 years old. And that was the last summer that he could do that because he had Alzheimer's the following year. But as long as he could, he was out there patiently going out. Here he was, 78. He was going out with organizers to their house meetings and then debriefing them afterward, telling him what went well, what didn't, how they could improve. Organizers who were like 50, 60 years younger than he was were still learning from the master in the summer of 88.
Now, one of the people that he trained was Caesar. Caesar was another person who had the fire. But on a spiritual or on a very personal level, who was Caesar to your father, and who was the father to Caesar? Who was that? The relationship is very exceptional.
Caesar, for my father, I think, was the organizer that he worked with and trained, that he was the proudest of, that he felt the closest to. So there was both a strong personal bond of friendship and camaraderie, a deep, deep bond. And from talking to Caesar and listening to him and from looking at some of the letters they wrote to each other, which I looked at closely in the days before my father's memorial service in 1992, letters between these two men, written at probably the toughest period of Caesar's organizing, when he was quietly organizing farm workers and nobody was paying him a salary. And my father and a few others were sending him $10, $15 a month whenever they could. And my dad understood how tough that was and how courageous it was of Caesar to go do it. And Caesar, at a real deep level, looked to my dad as the one person in the world that he could really spill his guts to about what he was going through. Not just the highlights and the victories, but the defeats and the disappointments and people who didn't come through. So in a way, they're almost like brothers. And my dad was the older brother.
Now here you are, following your father's footsteps. Where did your father leave you?
He taught me how to organize. He taught me, as my mom did, about justice. And he also taught me it was a lot of fun. That to live out your life's passion not only is meaningful, but it can be a lot of fun. So when I wake up in the morning to go organize, I look forward to it. He left me a legacy that I'm immensely proud of. Because what he taught me was do something important with your life. Go organize for justice. Help people learn about how to build power. Take risks. And go out looking for the biggest, baddest bully on the block and figure out a way to bring him down to size.
But here you are, 40 years after your father. But you're doing the same thing in the 40s and the 50s. When you reflect, I mean, you see certain parallels. It seems like you're almost following in his steps. We're in the 90s. That's not supposed to happen.
Well, all organizing is reorganizing. Corporations reorganize. People in the poorest communities have got to reorganize. The new realities out there. And just as in the late 40s, Mexican Americans were being targeted for discrimination. Here in the 1990s, we got Proposition 187 in California, which was really the symbol of Pete Wilson and others' racial scapegoating. So it's time to reorganize. So I'm involved right now with a network of organizations that both my dad and Cesar Chavez worked for, the Industrial Areas Foundation here in California, and we're involved in a major active citizenship campaign, meaning that we're organizing new immigrants to become politically involved and to learn how to become leaders in their own communities and develop strategies and build power. Because it's either organized money or organized people. Two forms of power, and we're out organizing people. So the politicians and others who are engaging in racial scapegoating now will be afraid to, after hundreds of thousands of new people become voters, and not only voters, but active in their community day in and day out, year in and year out.
But isn't there a certain frustration? Don't you feel any frustration that your dad was out there organizing for 50 years, and here we are starting at the same point again? And don't you get frustrated?
Sometimes I do get frustrated, yeah. And that's when I get reminded that this is a long haul. And there are going to be victories and defeats. But unless we're out there every day organizing, there won't be any victories. And we're building on the organizing that's gone before.
Okay. Anything else, Rick?
No. Sit still, everybody.
Okay, this is going to be room tone for the interview with Fred Ross Jr.
Quietness.